Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired, break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Today in the studio for our third mentoring conversation, total delight. You were all lucky to have Mickey Mightworth talk with us today. She's from Mightworth Consulting. She's a two-time winner of the Top Woman in Finance. Last year, she won the Minnesota Women's Mentoring Award and the Esteemed Partnership Award from Head Start for the groundbreaking work she's done in teaching homeless families the ropes on climbing out of poverty. She has spent 10 years working on rearranging resources so that people who have extra can give to people who need. Mickey is an international microlender and was one of the first people to start lending in a program called Kiva, a prosperity-based model of how to build entrepreneurship and fight long-term poverty. She has helped individuals from over 150 countries through her lending and was highlighted in Town & Country magazine for her work as an international philanthropist. She is currently working on the Itasca Project with other Fortune 500 CEOs and the major nonprofits of Minnesota on planning the next 10 years of growth for the city of Minneapolis. She has helped grow multiple nonprofits specifically to do grassroots level work to build prosperity in the city, and her real job is a chief financial officer for hire. She is currently working with 50 individual brands and 414 individuals and mentees. She's in her 18th year of business. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Each conversation just continues to get richer. I can feel the depth already here.
Well, wow. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is a fun time. I love hanging out with you. It's a fun time.
This is a blast. So we've been talking about your expansive life and what pulls you into different directions and your upbringing and how you've been taking risks. You've got a family, three children, grown adult children.
Yeah.
There's a gap that we need to talk about in your background where you did some really cool stuff, but also not so cool stuff.
Yeah.
So it was probably, what, after high school? So you were at the U of M?
You know, I went to the U later. I was that mom that I magically got pregnant. My parents still refer, so I went to a trade school out of high school.
Okay.
So I learned a trade, and I was out in the world doing that trade.
And, what was the trade?
I was a hairdresser.
Okay.
And I went to, my dad gave me a great piece of advice, which is that they were, my dad was not happy about that choice.
Okay.
Which I don't know, well, he may choose, I felt he didn't like that choice.
Okay.
He may have different words for me, so I shouldn't speak for him.
But, okay.
But his answer to me was, if you're going to go do something, go be the very best at it.
Nice.
And so we went to this a fancy school here.
Aveda?
Yep. So okay. I was horse's assistant and, you know, I got to travel with—
Oh my gosh, talk about a creative being.
Right.
Always experimenting. Right.
Which, you know what, he had the same love of French fries that I did. So we were good.
Oh, total bonding right away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I had long hair and long hair that wasn't colored. So he would come and grab my hair every day and yank it and be like, I will cut this for you.
Oh like, my gosh.
We'll see about that. So I got to do that, and I was in that field and knew right away, like, who makes the most money?
Okay.
Right? How do you make the most money? How do you be the very best at it? And how do you kind of do these things? So I did that part of it and did what I needed to. And then I got pregnant. I was traveling I got to compete against Fidel Sassoon's team, got to be on a lot of stages, got to do a lot of great hair. As a hairdresser, you have fantastic clothes.
Yeah.
And so I got to do everything that I wanted as a young person.
Mm-hmm.
My family, my aunts and so forth, still call it, I was in my 20s and I moved to Phoenix and they still call it when I ran away from home. When I ran away from home. So I got pregnant and came back here to have a baby, and just really went, I think I'm going to change this up. And so I put myself through college, which of course is not cheap with a baby. I was in a class with a professor who is still my dear friend to this day.
Wow, that's great.
And I was in a night class. My mom was generous enough to pay for a night class because she just was like, please go to college, you know, please. Yeah. And so I wrote this paper, and the professor, who I still call Doc, because you know I nickname everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, because the day he became a doctor, he wasn't a doctor when I met him, but he became a doctor while I was in college. Anyway, I wrote this paper, and he was calling names at the end of the day. And out of all the papers he had read, because my name is Mickey, he assumed I was a man.
Oh.
So he's like, and I need to talk to this person after class. So he like wrote my name on the thing. And I thought, oh, shoot.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I worked at a bar till 2 a.m. And then, you know, I worked full time and then went to school at night. And I mean, I was a tired girl.
Yeah.
So usually I was freshly showered. I had a young baby. And he's like, I need to talk to you after class. And he looked at me and he goes, that's you? And I thought, yeah, that's me. And he goes, look, I got to talk to you that you, what are you doing with your life? Why are you here? So I tell him my story. And he goes, yeah, you need to go to college. You are dangerous, uneducated. You are dangerous. He goes, you're really smart.
Yeah.
And I went,
oh, that's so great.
And I went,
perfect.
Well, that's great, but yeah. I have a baby. And he's like, I'm going to teach you how to do this. And he literally walked me from that class to a resource and taught me how to sign up for college.
Oh,
and then
what a gift.
Kind of put all those pieces together. So, you know, that had he not been brave enough to do that, we wouldn't have the Mickey and Mike worth we have today.
Wow.
Because I wouldn't have been able to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And you needed a mentor, and one was there.
And he was my mentor through all, I mean, to this day, like I can call him anytime and be like, Doc, what's up?
Hey, got a little problem on this end.
Yeah. You know, he was just a really fabulous friend. And I have enjoyed that friendship to even have had it at that time. Like if I never see him again, I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
For the things that he did. And he put up with a lot of harebrained schemes that I'd had in college. Because I always needed bus money.
Yeah.
Like I had to walk to school. It was super cold.
Okay.
So I really wanted to take the bus.
Yeah.
So I would make cookies or something like that and like sell them to my classmates who were much younger than I am. And they had money because like they don't have to feed a baby.
Yeah, right.
And so he would be like, what are you selling? Like I have 4 cookies left, man. I'll give you one if you don't bust me out. He's like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Just so the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that, you had to make your life work.
And you know what? My son grew up that way. Out of all of our children, my son is really a born entrepreneur. I mean, he had that lesson in him.
Early on.
So I think you just have that sometimes.
Yeah.
Of, I'm going to make it.
Yeah. That instinct of survival.
Well, I don't think it's even survival. I think it's, again, we talked about an agrarian lifestyle of you are rewarded for effort.
I see. Oh, yeah.
You know, that
okay. I'm looking at it from that angle. Yeah.
It doesn't hurt to do better.
Right.
You know, it's not necessarily that it's harder.
Yeah.
You know, effort isn't always awful. That it doesn't have to hurt for you to win or to get to claim it as a prize.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can enjoy it. Yeah. You can learn and grow without pain.
Sure.
Yeah.
We mentor. And so after you finished college,
My mom made me take this job. And so I went to work at a financial planning firm. And I will tell
you. When did the rich chicks come into?
Rich chicks came when I went to work for this planning firm that I thought, wow, why, what?
Okay.
I worked at the front desk. It was a crummy job. I made $18,000 a year. And I thought, whoa, I am rocking this.
Yeah, right.
I am like, do you know how much stuff I can pay with $18,000? Like I can have a car. You know, I was like, okay. And I thought I was pretty awesome to have $18,000 and a big girl job and a fancy whatever. But it's apparent my personality doesn't always fit in their box. And so I went there and we processed $1 million a day. Wow. Of checks that would come in the mail. So I would, you know, have to invest into everybody's accounts as an admin. I was an admin.
Okay.
And then the admin role, the level above it,
okay,
which was my mother, who went to go work as a VP for Borders.
Oh.
Because she was already
Borders
retired.
Borders Books.
Borders Books. She was already retired.
Mm-hmm.
So she just needed this little job.
Yeah.
And so she got it, made me go to work there. And then she left. And then I had a chance to do her job. And I went to go take that. And I thought, oh, geez, I cannot do that. Like, I got to be home. My kid's coming off the bus.
Yeah.
And Roy, my friend Roy, and I had been there working there for a few years. And Roy puts me in his office and he goes, why aren't you taking this job? And I said, I cannot meet your qualifications. And he goes, please review said qualifications. And I said, I got a baby at home.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way. I can't bring him to school and get him off the bus in what you have. And he says, look, I'll make you a deal. You know how to do everything out there. I'll hire you an assistant. I'll pay you as if you were here full time, but you can come in an hour and a half different on the front or the back end.
Oh my gosh. Beautiful.
And I went, what? Like what? You can make rules like that? Like what? What?
Are you the boss?
Yeah, you're the boss. And that piece, that relationship really forced me to see the world differently. And while I was processing all this paperwork, I thought, who has all this money? Like people would write checks, you know, like $30,000. They would write a check, put an envelope, stamp, and I would open it. And I would think, who has this in their checking account?
Yeah, right.
Like who owns this?
Yeah.
And so I had opened my own and I would be like writing out a check for $7 to put in my Roth IRA. Like, okay, you know, because they would take any amount.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would put $7 and you're like, okay, woo, I got 11 now. You know, I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
At 18,000, you don't have any money either.
Yeah, right.
I bought a car for $100.
Okay.
He said, what do you need? And I said, I need a car for $100. And he goes, oh, well, that's not going to happen. I said, don't you bet on that. Somebody's going to sell me a car for $100.
Yeah.
And somebody did. You know, lasted me for that whole year. So, you know.
Wow.
So I don't think like he did, but he gave me a lot of things to think about differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started this thing called Rich Chicks. We had all these new advisors that would come in to financial planning who were all starving. They don't make any money. I mean, the pay structure on a new financial advisor is horrible. I mean, 90% fail out.
Yeah.
So 50% will fail out in the first year, and then the other 30 will fail out in the first 30, you know, the next 2 years. So 90% of the people that come into my industry fail. So when you make it to the third year, we all just go, yay, alive, yay.
Yeah.
So we had this guy named Alan, who I still know to this day, that I said to Alan, I said, hey, here's what I need you to do. You need to teach me all this money stuff and all my friends. So
yes,
I'm going to make you a deal.
Because you're a beacon of light and that attracts lots of other lights.
Yeah.
You got to bring them with you.
Yeah. So I'm going to make you a deal. You can hang out with us. We're going to meet every month. We're going to meet at this coffee shop. I'm going to, like, my friends are hot. So, like, you can't ever date any of them. Like, you can't pick them up. Like, you just have to be here and answer all of our stuff. And Alan is this, like, little Filipino guy who is just fantastic. And he works for E-Trade still. And anyway, so he did it. And, you know, this was a very unique moment for him too. So we named it Rich Chicks.
Yeah.
And that was in 1998. And I became a financial advisor 1 year later.
Hmm.
So, and what happened is we started meeting. And at the end of the year, I'm like, we'll just do this for a year. And he would answer all the questions that we had. He would, you know, talk about things. And we just started learning about money. And I will tell you that we call that group the Fabulous 15. Mm-hmm. And that group of women who, I mean, we were waitresses and hairdressers. And, you know, we were not people of, not necessarily uneducated, but we were not people of means.
Yeah.
We didn't know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the stats were very different at that time.
Yeah.
That only one out of 10 households at that time had a female breadwinner as the primary breadwinner. And then I remember when it went to 4, and then during the recession, sometimes it was 6. So, I mean, that's a huge difference, because 100% would have been 1 to 2.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And from 1 to 4, that's really crazy.
Yeah.
So I had this, you know, I had just come off of my thesis, so everything to me was a, you know, problem to solve.
Yeah.
And so I had this idea that women weren't saving money because they didn't have access.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you that the thoughts I thought then are very different than the thoughts I think now.
Oh, really?
On how do people access wealth? And
what are your thoughts? What were your thoughts then, and what are they now?
My thoughts were that they didn't necessarily have access to information.
Okay.
Because we didn't. I mean, I didn't know, where would you look up stuff about a retirement account? I didn't know who you would call.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Alan was willing to come to the table. That's sweet.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to do a savings plan or automatic investing or anything like that. That wasn't in my genre of thought.
Yeah.
And so it was really helpful. But that Fabulous 15, I mean, that was a lot of years ago. And some of the people that came out of that group are some of your stars here in the city.
Mm.
I mean, that they grew up to be and do wonderful things.
Yeah.
And so somebody asked me in a long time in an interview, why did you start Rich Chicks? And I went, well, because I wanted to be one.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like, I wanted to, like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And it was really, it that environment to be able to just say, let's have a place that's safe, that's intimate, that's friendly, that is supportive, and just ask everything you have.
Yeah.
That doesn't actually exist in a lot of places.
Yeah.
So 1 year they wouldn't leave. And then we did it for 2 years. And then we did it for 3 years. And then we started another group and another group and another group. And as a project, Rich Chicks morphed throughout the years. And I haven't run it for years. My mom runs it.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a fantastic job.
And so she's still running groups?
She is running, she has her own kind of version of it because every business owner is different.
Yeah.
Her version doesn't look like mine. But she's still running the NW2 program, which is a mentoring a mastermind group. Mm. It's only $10. It's at Lund's Uptown. I teach once a month. She teaches once a month. I still go back in and teach 2 classes a year for Rich Chicks.
Okay.
So people can still have access to mm-hmm. me.
Yeah. Because I saw on the website that you've got a couple courses.
Yeah. I got a couple classes that I'll teach. One is, you know, my favorite class of all time, no matter what, is the class that I've been teaching for a lot of years called Monetary Identity. That is I love that class because of how life-changing it is, much like the work that you do, right?
Yeah.
When you start to teach people how to think differently, they do.
Yeah. And is that where you're connecting prosperity and—
Yeah, yeah. Well, and how you solve
concepts.
A problem.
Mm-hmm.
How you solve a problem is going to decide how much wealth you have. I mean, that's the basic fact.
Oh, that is really interesting.
Right. How you solve a problem is going to decide how much wealth you have. And how you solve that problem—
That is, okay, that's really profound. Yeah.
It is. So I'll say it again.
Yeah.
How you solve a problem is going to decide how much wealth you have. And that is not just how you have access to wealth. So if you are someone who always does the slash and burn, cut, 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 cut.
Yeah. Within your business?
It doesn't matter where you are.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't matter how you solve
it. If your philosophy, if you're in financial crisis, is to cut all your expenses.
Look, that person who is in crisis, it doesn't matter if it's financial.
It's emotional crisis.
That's
tied together.
That is how they solve a problem, is that they will have a certain regimen of survival thoughts.
Okay.
That they go right to survival mentality.
Sure.
And that is always a punishing place. Mm. It's agitating.
Yep.
It's annoying.
Yep.
It's reactive.
Yep.
It is powerless.
Yes.
It's just totally no fun.
Yeah.
And long term.
I've been there.
Yeah. I've been there too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That thinking is very destructive.
It's very destructive.
Yeah.
And you can't build wealth there.
Yeah.
Even if you know you have to. You just get this piece. But when you're thinking in a more of a growth mentality, which is kind of a level up, you aren't reactive. You start enacting, right? You start going.
So when there's a problem around money,
any problem, whether it be in your business, whether it be in your marriage or anything, you go, let me start building.
So any problem that surfaces, this is a strategy for how you approach it.
Yeah, you're either going to solve the world in a survival mentality or not.
Yeah.
And those that choose to unlearn everything that they had from survival mentality, which is most of us.
Yeah.
Anyone who's invested, and all of you who are out there know this, because you've probably lived it, which is, you know, when you're in survival mentality.
Yeah, right.
I mean, my shoulders are in this interview. I'm starting to cringe just thinking about that time, right? I mean, starting to go, ooh.
Yeah.
When you're in that state and you're all crunched up, that's not a great problem-solving place. Right. That's not, you don't get full use of your brain.
Right.
And that is your greatest superpower, is to be able to use all of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you if you can stop problem solving for your whole life in that side, and start moving to these other ways of thought, which may be growth or maybe prosperity,
mm-hmm.
They're two different stepping stones.
Yeah.
and when I think of growth mentality, it's a lot of times taught as win-win.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We hear that. But when I think of prosperity, which is where I teach at, is, you know, you have to stop thinking just win-win. You really have to, that's actually a brain box itself, because there's some concepts in there that don't really make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start going to prosperity thought, you really start to understand that magnification is the natural state.
Yeah.
That things naturally change.
It sounds to me like you're talking about the law of attraction.
Some of that. It really is just the law of things.
Okay.
I mean, when you look at the universe, it's not getting smaller.
Right.
I mean, if we just use science, the world is not getting smaller. Things don't hold still.
Right.
So, you know, magnification is the rule of the world. I mean, the rule of the cosmos.
Okay.
Whether or not that's a religious affiliation or something for anyone, it's just the way of science.
Yeah.
But in prosperity thought, you also really, you don't try to make it even. You go, what is the highest good here? Let's do that.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I don't have to try to make it even. Win-win is like, okay, giver's gain, right?
Where then you end up keeping track.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of giver's gain.
Yeah, I'm not at all.
It feels destructive to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that idea of kind of going to highest good, what is the highest good? You can kind of undo all of that emotional baggage.
Yeah.
And work from a different place.
Yeah. It totally shifts your energy up.
Yeah. Even while we're just talking about this, right?
Yeah.
If you actually were just standing on the fifth floor looking down at your own life right now, you would look at it and go, oh, wow, maybe you should park this differently. Or rearrange it or something. It's just so effortless to see. And that's why people hire consultants, is because we're all going to stand up on the fourth floor and look down at your life.
And say, I wonder what would happen if you shifted this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I happen to be somebody that likes math. So, I mean, I'm a dyslexic. So, you know, a dyslexic financial advisor, use at your own risk. But
seems to be working for you.
I have to really write things down.
Yeah. Well, and you know where you're limited.
Well, I always have somebody check my math, yes.
Yeah,
But I'm good at math. I mean, I solve the world with math.
Yeah.
That when I look at something, I instantly solve it with math. So that is the tool I use.
Yeah.
To get through, how do you grow that business? Or, you know, something as simple in my life is I was tired of doing dishes. So I try to hack things. right? So I hacked my grocery budget and figured out how much we could. I made a deal with my husband. I said, look, I'll make you a deal. I got a sweet deal, but it has two things you got to live on. And he goes, well, give me the deal. I said, here's the deal. You never have to go to the grocery store for anything other than bread, eggs, milk, and just basics. Cheese. Guy lives on cheese. You have a beautiful girl that'll pick you up in a beautiful car every night to take you to dinner. You can eat at any restaurant in the city that you want to. And I'll do it every night for the rest of your life. And he goes, okay, what are the two things? I said, you got to eat within a certain budget and you can only drink water.
Perfect.
And he's like, okay.
He's all in.
Yeah. So that changed our lifestyle because I just had to solve it differently.
Yeah.
Right? How can I hack the fact that I'm sick of doing dishes or coming home after a long day and trying to cook dinner and make all this, you know, wifey stuff?
Yeah.
And why don't I just not go into the house? Why don't I just honk the horn? You get into this beautiful car and I'll take you to anywhere you want.
Yeah. And we'll have a nice evening together.
Right. And a lot of times that means we'll split a meal, which, you know, I don't need to have a full meal these days because I don't know if you've seen portion sizes. They've grown immensely. Nobody can finish their dinner.
Yeah.
Who can finish that?
I know, right?
Yeah.
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 We don't need that much food and we need even less when we're aging.
Yeah. Yeah. So I solve the world with math.
I see. So that's a wonderful way to do it.
In financial planning or business planning, things like that, that I use math as my tool.
Yeah. You had mentioned that there's a where women were at when you started Rich Chicks.
Yeah.
And where women are at now is different.
Yeah. Really different.
Yeah.
I actually laughed about this. Sarah, who was in that group, owns a store called I Like You.
Oh, yeah.
And they now have a second store. And she runs it with Angela, who is fantastic. And they have another person that works there that's pretty wonderful. She made a decision to have a very different business model. And they made a decision in their store to say, we want to make sure we feed artists in Minnesota. And, you know, they've personally written out over $2 million of checks to artists here in Minneapolis because they opened a store that specifically is for artists.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And they were willing to do all of the things that it was to commit to that service of being that way. So, you know, that idea of prospering,
yeah,
you know, nobody sets out as a waitress in a bar to go, hey, I think I'm going to write $2 million worth of checks.
You're right.
And I will tell you, that's their favorite thing to do is they bring out this giant checkbook and they set it on the counter, plop, and they, you know, bring out a pen. Let's write you a check. And they will hand you a check.
Oh.
And that is one of their favorite things. Hmm. And they're able to do that because people go, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Right? I'll buy my gifts at your store.
Yeah.
And because they do that, now somebody can actually have a different life.
Yeah.
So
completing that circle,
mm-hmm. right? If we just think about things differently.
Yeah.
It works out a lot easier.
Yeah.
And it actually becomes effortless.
Yeah.
So doing good in the world actually becomes easier than not doing good in the world.
Right. Cuz you know, being super self-involved and just, you know, padding your own pocketbook gets kind of boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually think you'll make more money if you do it the different way. I mean, I have proof.
Lots of it.
I have plenty of proof. Yeah.
So, and along with Rich Kids, you also have Kids with Cash.
Rich Chicks, yep. We did Kids with Cash.
With a K for Cash.
Yep. K for Kid and K for Cash.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that for a lot of years.
Your phone's talking to us.
My phone is talking to us. In an Australian accent, by the way. That's my new one. he's great. If you guys have Siri,
okay.
Pick the Australian guy.
Okay. All right. I'm going to tell my daughter about this.
Oh, yeah. It's great. No, new. Anyway, Kids with Cash came up. So during the Bush administration, the rules for teaching financial education changed. And I sat on, during the Clinton administration, I sat on the National Anti-Poverty League. Mm-hmm. I was the first person ever to sit on that national league that was actually ever in poverty, that was ever broke. No one in that whole system of, like, who's making all of our national laws at that time, no one. Not one single person had ever been on welfare, yet they're making all the laws for it. And I remember sitting at more than one table going, excuse me, have any of you actually used food stamps? Because they suck. Like, you can't do all these things. And all the people in the world who are making these rules did not know how many difficulties you had in the system that they've created.
Yeah, right. And they never asked people.
No. Gosh, no. No. That they would, you statistically find out about them from a desk. And those people who are doing real, that service that's kind of right in the trenches, they have a very different view than a policymaker sometimes. And so anyway, right after that, I went into the National Endowment for Financial Education and went to work on that group. And that's where we started Kids with Cash, because we had put in some rules about you have to have financial education to get federal money for a high school. So they had to have 15 hours of economic education. Mm-hmm. And the research at that time from Bush 1 was, and I've looked for this statistic over and over again, and it's been lost in the ethos of internet, but they had a statistic at that time that if you had 15 hours of economic education, you would save 50% more over your lifetime, was the prognosis they had given.
Okay.
And I was working a program that had been started by the Teamsters Union to help get more high schoolers in the trades. So we were teaching at this high school that had taken me on and went, I like your ideas, help us with these kids. And so I would go teach every Wednesday, and we built a different program because children that are in the inner city schools really interface with wealth differently. They are the youngest taxpayers, our inner city youth. They become taxpayers age 14. And they will frequently remain in these tax brackets that are significantly lower than someone who comes in at a different trajectory. So we had to rewrite financial education that actually would help them and teach them how to buy homes or teach them how to think differently. Kind of, you know, let's give you, right, how you solve a problem is going to decide how much wealth you have. Or give them language that they could really understand. And some of it is still that I teach every day, right, that money only has one purpose. It's going to buy you some choices.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of choices. You might want some too. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
You might want some.
Yeah.
And when you start looking at that money, that's all money is good for, right? Because we have a lot of our emotional garbage around money or people who have money.
Yeah. Right.
And it
really blocks people from really making some solid decisions to better their lives.
Because they got some sort of hinky-jinky with it. I don't know what that is, but everybody has something.
Well, yeah.
Whether they're embarrassed about debt, they don't want to see how you spend money. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Let's just find out how you're really going to use it.
Yeah.
And why you're using it that way.
Yeah.
It's going to buy you some choices. And sometimes people, their choice is to run away.
Okay.
You know, sometimes it's just
there's also different responsibilities with your money choices.
Yeah.
That are tied to that.
Yeah.
So being curious, taking risks, to try out being, you know, looking at money in this way or that.
Yes. Well, but I also, I will tell you that as an entrepreneur, the entrepreneur that I was 15 years ago and the entrepreneur that I am now, I don't run out of money.
Right.
You know, now, but boy, at that time I might have.
Yeah.
You know, so you the more that you understand numbers and you understand math and what
the
you
practice.
Have to do, the more you can do that.
And train yourself how to think and plan and do and cash flow.
Last year, so I sell my time for a living.
Yeah.
So that's what happens is people pay me money to be in the same room with me. And then I'm going to use my brain. I mean, that's what I sell.
Yeah.
And my magical ability to do monkey math. to go, hold on, do it this way. Match, 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 right? Scratch, scratch, scratch on a piece of paper. What about this? I mean, that is 40% of what I'm doing during the day is just scratching things on a piece of paper and going, does this work?
Yeah.
That ability to do that, last year we had sold, so we kind of say to all of our clients, hey, how much time do you need this year? You know, what do you got to get done? Mm-hmm. Let me see how we can do it. And then, you know, what has to be done by me? What has to be done by other people? But the last year we sold 1,500 appointments in 20 minutes when my books opened.
Oh my God.
That was last year. So for me, I don't have to worry about money anymore.
Yeah.
Because I always know that there's money coming in, that it's a lot easier to be me.
Yeah.
Because of all of the work I had to do, of all the effort I put in every year.
Right.
To do the things that we have. And I have a really high retention rate. I have a 98.8
wow.
retention rate.
That's incredible.
So my client that was my client last year or 10 years ago
yeah.
is frequently still here.
Yeah.
So that also makes it easier for me to have that conversation. But it wasn't always that way. I mean, I was really as worried about money as everyone else.
Yeah.
But you had to think about how to do it differently.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stay in survival mode and build a legacy.
Yeah.
I just had to put it away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
makes so much sense.
But this year in 2016, when we opened the books, we didn't even open them. We literally went, let me take in all your bids for what you want, and we're going to try to sort out those hours. I'm going to send you an email of the hours that you're allowed and see if that works. You know, how much can we get done in that time? Or can an assistant work on some of this or whatever? My books were closed for 6 years. I didn't take in new clients for 6 years. I just opened my books up again 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and
doing great work.
It's fun work.
And it's working for you.
And so,
for your clients.
But that concept of math, right, mm-hmm. how do you get to there,
yeah.
is that I did the math.
Yeah.
That I went, look, I have to see this many people.
In order to make my lifestyle work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I got to tell you, it's not getting cheaper to live out there.
Yeah, right. Not at all.
No.
Yeah.
You know, there's no more $5 lunch.
Yeah.
That you want to eat.
Right.
That you actually want to eat. So, you know, and I have a lot of employees, and I mean, we have a whole company.
Yeah.
So that part, I have to be able to make money because those employees also have a family to feed.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
was them.
Yeah.
You know, I was that girl at the front desk.
Yeah.
That, you know, just had to get home to get her baby off the bus.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. That's why we have payroll every week, actually. That everybody needs payroll every 7 days.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh. We mentor. There was an article that I read in the Minnesota Women's Press in 2009 that there was a question about what are some unique ways that women interact with money that I wanted to make sure that I asked you before we finish out.
You know, in what way? So how do women interact with money differently is they internalize it.
Okay.
I mean, first—
Kind of like how they handle problems in their life.
You get the A. Very good. That's your A for the day. I'll write it on your piece of paper.
Oh.
There's your A.
I've gotten,
right,
last time I was with you, I got an A+.
Right. You know what? I'm going to give you an A and a happy face for that. Right there.
There it is.
You guys, I just wrote that on her paper.
Okay.
By the way.
I might have to take a picture of that and
you know
put
what?
It
we'll,
in.
Yeah. We'll put it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll put it up. You earned it. You know what? Women really, really interface with money differently. And I will tell you that as gender lines are changing, just in general, that our boys are just as screwed up as our girls on some really big topics on body image and on money.
Yeah.
And that there's a kinder, gentler way to be.
Yeah.
And that kinder, gentler way to be is to just really learn how to use your choices.
Yeah.
And use them in the way that's right for you.
Yeah.
And not have to do the you're supposed to do it this way. And women absolutely buy far more gifts, but men give more gifts. Hmm. So they give larger gifts. Men gift very differently than women do. Women gift, they like to see where their gift is going. They kind of like to gift at eye level, and they do it a lot. That they are spending money every week, every month on a card or this or that. And men are really going to drop a check.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And they're going to go, oh, yeah, here.
If I'm going to give a gift.
I'm going to give a gift.
Let
me make it worthwhile. They're not going to spend it on this little $2, $5, $7, $20 thing. They're going to
get a car.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're mm-hmm. going to give a gift that's memorable.
Yeah.
And they just gift differently.
Yeah.
So, and women, I got to tell you, they're getting smarter every hour of the day. Mm-hmm. And they, when I came into this business, I also had this hypothesis, which has played out to be true across the nation, across the world, which is that what has changed for women and money is that it's now a healthcare conversation. And I don't mean healthcare about like insurance. I mean that women are the caregivers. Women are the doorway to all health conversations. And all I have to do is say to you, how many of you asked your mother about something when you were sick?
Mm.
My nose is red. I have a zit
Everybody,
here. And
yeah.
I feel sick or whatever, right?
Yeah. Mother's women, diagnosed.
Right. Women are the gatekeepers of health information.
Yeah.
They tell their husbands when to go. They tell their partners when to go to the doctor. They bring in new information. They're always searching. And really, in the last 20 years, women changed that role. And they decided that gatekeeping that they used for health was also now for money. And so you have a group really starting in my era and your era,
yeah,
where they realize that money is a health issue. So how do we save money? How do we put it away? It's not a homemaking conversation anymore. It is this is for the health of our family. We have to have money. And that's when things really, really changed for women, for the better.
Yeah. So thought-provoking.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Don't you love money? See? You didn't know you love money until we hung out.
That's right.
Until we hung out. Right. Don't worry.
Fantastic.
It doesn't get any less boring.
Oh, well, thank you. This has been a treasure.
I will see you again soon. I'll take the love. I'll take the love. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
I'll see everybody out there.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Bye. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, brother from another mother. See you next week.
Bye.
Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process, along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning. We do what works. get involved, get in started, you can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.